10 hours on my feet, traffic, noise, everybody needs something from me. My head is spinning. I just need the world to stop for 1 second. But then I get home, shoes off, phone out, and I open Modo Casino. Hundreds of slots, classic table games. It's my instant reset. The variety I want in the quiet I need.
Modo Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Modo.us for more details. Download the Modo Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Modo Casino. America's social casino.
Hi, everybody. It's James and Andy here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two-fourths of a group of people who love facts, and we love to find new facts, and we come here every week and tell each other about them. For instance, Andy, did you know that one of the world's oldest cycling road races is getting much harder because people keep stealing the road?
I want to know more already, but I'm instead going to tell you my new fact, which is that some ancient coffins from the 17th century have faces.
The coffins have faces.
It's really creepy.
Not just on the inside.
No.
Wow. If you like the sound of those facts, or indeed facts in general, then come and find us, No Such Thing as a Fish, wherever you get your podcasts.
Giving you a behind-the-scenes look of Smashville's team. This is Preds Insiders with Adam Vingan. Smashville lives here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game and the Game Nashville Sports Network.
Preds Insiders 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Adam Vingan, Nick Keezer, joined this week by Max Herz of the Predators Radio Network. I forgot what Max Herz looked like because the Predators have been gone for so long. Max, it's great to have you back in town. I imagine after spending multiple days at the beginning and the end of this past road trip in frigid Winnipeg, that this mid-20s weather in Nashville is practically balmy by comparison.
Yeah, I don't know if it's the Fahrenheit-Celsius conversion, but the cold Nashville almost feels worse than the dead cold Winnipeg.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's a cold above expected. I know you're is that a real advanced stat I'm pulling out
it
on
is
you
now
here?
It is now temperature above expected, but we're glad to have you back in town. The Nashville Predators wrapped up their long road trip last night in Winnipeg, which is where they started. That actually, they did not start that road trip there, but they were there twice. They started the road trip in St. Louis with a loss to the Blues, 7-4 loss to the Blues. They went to Winnipeg second, lost 3-0 to the Jets, then to Minnesota on New Year's Eve, a 5-3 loss there. Wins in back-to-back games against the Canucks and Flames, 3-0 against the Canucks, 4-1 against the Flames, and then, of course, last night losing 5-2 to the Winnipeg Jets. So the Predators wrap up their six-game road trip with a 2-4 record. They went 0-4. Against the Central Division, the two wins, of course, against Pacific Division opponents, outscored 21-16 on the road trip. So, Max, having been around the team for the past few weeks, let's start broad. What were your general takeaways from this six-game road trip that the Predators just returned from last night?
Yeah, I think, first of all, I mean, I looked at this road trip from the moment the schedule came out in July, and it's like, what is happening here? Why do you need to be in Winnipeg twice? Why can you not play in Winnipeg two games in a row? And the weirdest part of that is it's not like the Jets had another game they had to get in. On New Year's Eve, when it would have made sense for there to be a back-to-back rematch of the Preds and Jets on the first visit, the Jets got sent from Winnipeg to Denver to play the next night. So it would have made sense for everybody to play twice in a row, and it was just such a weird trip. Back-to-back, 2 days off, back-to-back, 2 days off, and then a rematch of a game you just played. So just a weird trip in general, and like I don't know how you could expect a winning record on that trip, and the Preds were one win away from that happening. The St. Louis game was a separate journey, so we'll go just these last five because the Preds were home after that St. Louis game and then relaunched to Winnipeg. So I mean, if they had won that game against the Jets last night, it would have been a 3-2 road trip, which would have been incomprehensible for a team towards the bottom of the standings to have pulled that out. And they were there in all five games last night. I mean, you didn't convert much along the way. You weren't getting heavily outplayed, but you were losing from the jump. And then to get a minute and a half 5-on-3 to have a chance to get back in it. I mean, I don't know what more you could ask for. And if you capitalize on that, maybe you at least get that game to overtime and you have a 500 points percentage on the trip. But they weren't able to do that. But I think every effort on the road trip was competitive. I think it was a fair road continuation of the way they played at home before Christmas on that four-game homestand, which was 3-0-1 and should have been 4-0. They've looked better. They have, and they're finally getting there. They're getting there at the halfway point of the season, but they're getting there.
The Predators now are 13-21-7 on the season, 5-14-4 on the road. After playing six consecutive road games, the Predators are 30th in the NHL in points percentage at .402, ahead of the San Jose Sharks at .372, and the Chicago Blackhawks at .350. One thing that did happen last night, Max, one thing we've been waiting a long time for, Philip Forsberg scored a goal. He scored a power play goal against the Winnipeg Jets, breaking a career-worst 18-game goal drought. So although Forsberg has been racking up the assists, he has one goal and 16 assists over his past 13 games. And the reason why I use 13 games, if I'm not mistaken, Max, and you have your handy-dandy line card in front of you. 13 games is when we've seen Philip Forsberg, Steven Stamkos, and Jonathan Marchessault start as a line. I believe it was the game before that 13-game stretch where they played as a line within that game. But it was the game against the Flames about a month ago where they started as a line. So over those 13 games, one goal at a power play goal, 16 assists, 17 points. So more than a point per game. But Philip Forsberg breaking the drought last night, and Max, you know this full well, especially for someone such as Philip Forsberg, whose job it is to score goals. Although he's racking up the assists and he's helping making plays, I'm sure it was weighing on him that he hadn't scored a goal. What have you seen from Philip Forsberg, and did you notice an evident sigh of relief when that one went in the net last night?
I mean, I couldn't hear the sigh, even though the crowd in Winnipeg was underwhelming last night, and we talked about that during the game. It was crazy how quiet it was there, and it was pretty full, too, and we were just there a week earlier, and it was nuts. So it was weird. I don't know. Maybe I could have heard him sigh from all the way up in the press box, but yeah, I think the thing that we've noticed and talked about during our game broadcast with Hal is he hasn't been hitting the net enough. He's been getting his chances. He hasn't been hitting the net. He's been missing the net, and I mean, this has been the Preds' problem all season, Adam. They've not been good finishing. They have not been shooting. They've been passing out of chances. They've been overthinking a lot of things. And now in these chances, Forsberg's passes have been good, as you said. 16 assists in 12 games. That's pretty good. Better than an assist per game. I mean, he's been part of plays. Many of those have been primary assists, and he's been working with his line mates and gotten two guys in Stamkos and Marchessault going along with him at a point per game pace in a season where they were barely a point per week over the first month, month and a half. So Forsberg's been a big part of the turnaround for those guys. But yeah, they need a ton more for him, and they need him to open up on the power play more. They need him to let it fly on the power play more, and that's what we saw last night. 84-mile-an-hour wrister, top shelf, perfectly placed, exactly what you need to see from Philip Forsberg, and a sight for sore eyes after he did not score a goal in the entire month of December.
So that line, Forsberg, Stamkos, and Marchessault, and by the way, we should note that Steven Stamkos left the game last night against the Jets with an undisclosed injury. Andrew Brunette did not have an update after the game regarding Steven Stamkos. Luke Evangelista also left the game last night with a lower body injury, so keep those in mind. You know, the injuries are starting to pile up. We've been seeing this. Jeremy Lauzon, Cole Smith, and Adam Willsby are all on injured reserve. So we'll see what happens with Steven Stamkos and Luke Evangelista. The Predators do not play again until Saturday when they host the Washington Capitals. So they have some days here to recover. But as it relates to that line, and one thing that I'm wondering about as to why Forsberg might be struggling to score goals, Jack Hahn, who is a coach slash consultant, has a great Substack, the Hockey Tactics newsletter. I highly suggest it. I saw this tweet from him last month, and I got a chuckle out of the tweet, but he did make some interesting points. Jack Hahn on Twitter wrote, quote, "Is there a more dysfunctional, high-profile line as Forsberg, Stamkos, and Marchessault in Nashville? Three natural shooters, zero forecheckers, and zero playmakers. struggles to create shots off the rush, all right-handed, so you just need to force them to the left. And I've wondered about this handedness thing, Max. Willie Donick has mentioned this to me multiple times. You know, having a line with all three right-handed players on it, that is unique. I can't imagine there are many high-profile lines that have three right-handed shots on them. And Forsberg, as we know, is a right-handed shot that plays on his off wing. But I'm wondering if you think that has anything to do with maybe some of the struggles that he's had goal-scoring-wise over the past month, month and a half.
Well, I don't know if I would say the right-handedness specifically. My reaction to that, and I know this doesn't really answer your question, but my reaction to that is that explains why it took so long to get these three guys together. And that's what Andrew Brunette was thinking when he was trying other combinations early in the season. And if you remember, this line came together pretty much by accident on a game when Gus Nyquist was out with an illness that was not expected day of.
And Ryan O'Reilly was injured at the time, if I'm not mistaken.
Right. So that's how Stamkos got to center, and that's how you got the guys who were really, without a doubt, your three most skilled offensive players. That's how they finally got together. But, I mean, this was not the plan from training camp to load up with these guys. And, I mean, I think Andrew Brunette thinks similarly to what you just read from Jack Hahn, who's an advanced hockey mind. And Bruno thinks about the game in that exact way a lot of the time. And I think that's why that line did not start the season together. So I don't know if I would say that they've been forced left. Like, I don't think that's something that I personally have seen. But I think they've swung wide a lot. And I think when they've worked from behind the net, I mean, it doesn't really matter the handedness. So I think that's helped them out a lot since Stamkos has gone to center, actually. I don't know. I don't think the all right-handed part is the negative part. But I don't think you can detract too much from Forsberg's game. Yeah, he should have had some more goals over the last month. I mean, that goes without saying. He's been in every game, and he's Philip Forsberg. He should have had some goals. But I don't think you can fault the way these guys have played. I think they've played well enough to be a top line on a competitive team. They've all been a point per game. They've all had a point in almost every game. Marchessault's had a point in 12 of 13. Stamkos had a point in 11 of 13. Forsberg's had a point in 10 of 13. And they're all a point per game or better. So I think it's tough to nitpick where they're at right now, but I think that explanation tells you why this wasn't plan A.
That line, by the way, was outscored 3-2 at 5-on-5 over the course of the road trip. But overall, as Max has said, the body of work in terms of on-ice goals for and against is heavily in their favor. And, you know, we have seen that line breathe new life into Marchessault and Stamkos. I've mentioned that I feel like Steven Stamkos has looked reinvigorated. Is the word I continuously use, reinvigorated by that move to center. And of course, Jonathan Marchessault, after a really slow start to the season, seems to have found his legs on that line. So a lot of good has come out of that grouping. One that, as Max just said, is not one that perhaps the Predators ever thought they would have to use, but ultimately, you know, they seem to have found a top line that works. The Predators, after this long road trip, do get a nice slab of home cooking. Maybe I'm thinking about ribs as I say slab, but a nice slab of home cooking. Five consecutive home games starting on Saturday against the Washington Capitals. They also host the Golden Knights, the Blackhawks, the Wild, and the Sharks. And that Sharks game could be pretty interesting, depending on who might be in that.
But I actually think every game of this homestand is interesting for its own reasons.
I do as well. And I think of the game against the Jets. Let's include the game against the Jets from last night. Because we saw how well the Predators played, as you alluded to, Max. We saw how well the Predators played before the break. And they beat some good teams. They went to Dallas. They won on the road. They beat Los Angeles at home. They beat Carolina at home. And no disrespect to Vancouver and Calgary, the two teams that the Predators defeated on this road trip. But the Canucks are in disarray for many reasons. A lot of injuries, a lot of locker room drama. The Flames, you know, no pun intended, they're not as hot as they were at the start of the season. I looked at the game against the Jets. I look at the game against the Capitals and the game against the Golden Knights as the true litmus test of what this team could be. Because the Jets are the second best team in the NHL. The Capitals are the third best team in the NHL. And the Golden Knights are the best team in the NHL. So if we want to see if the Predators have really made progress, they have to do it against top competition. It didn't happen last night against Winnipeg, but we'll see what happens on Saturday against Washington and next week against Vegas.
Yeah, I think it's fun because the homestands start with those great teams, and then you got the Blackhawks, which two teams that are not playing well, but they still don't like each other, so that'll be fun. And then the Wild will be unhappy with Zach LaRue
that
for
injuring
their captain, even though Jared Spurgeon apparently might be back already by that game, and they very conveniently did not announce his injury timeline until an hour after the suspension came out.
Interesting.
Yeah, thought that was kind of weird.
But the Predators will be back in action, as I said, on Saturday against the Washington Capitals at Bridgestone Arena. Coming up next, we did see a lot of younger players get into the lineup for the Nashville Predators on this road trip. I do want to talk about a couple of them with Max. Max Herz of the Predators Radio Network joining me tonight on Preds Insiders 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Preds Insiders 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Adam Vingan joined this week by Max Herz of the Predators Radio Network, back in town now that the Predators have wrapped up their six-game road trip, if you include the game in St. Louis to start, although, as Max said, they did come home. But overall, six consecutive games on the road. Happy to have Max back in town. So, Max, over the course of this road trip, we did see a lot of younger players get into the lineup, and I want to spend some time talking about them. I happen to be on pre- and post-game last Friday when you and Hal Gill were calling the game in Vancouver. That was the NHL debut of Ozzie Weisblatt, who is back in Milwaukee. But a fabulous story. Ozzie Weisblatt, drafted in the first round by the Sharks in 2020, was loaned to the Milwaukee Admirals last season, was a good player. The Predators officially acquired him in the offseason in a one-for-one trade with Igor Afanasyev. And he makes his long-awaited NHL debut in Vancouver. He's a fabulous story. His mother is deaf, if I'm not mistaken. If I recall correctly, the Sharks announced his drafting by signing his name, O-Z-Z-Y. But I saw that that got a lot of attention. And by the way, I need you to go over the names of the Weisblatt children, because when I heard you say this on the broadcast, I was just like, that's an impressive array of children. So let's go over the names of the Weisblatt children.
Yeah, his older brothers are Orca and Ocean. His younger brother is Oasis, O-A-S-I-Z. And then the youngest of five is the only sister, Oceana. So very alliterative and very creative, just awesome across the board. And I mean, Ozzie is like the most common name of the group. That's
yes.
When you know you've got an awesome group.
So let's go over them again.
In Ocean.
Order. Ocean.
Orca.
Orca.
Ozzie.
Ozzie.
Oasis.
Okay.
Oceana.
I like it.
Incredible.
It's fabulous. And I know you and Hal talked to him on the broadcast. I know it was an emotional day for him and his family. And, you know, that's always one of my favorite parts of the job, is being able to see these kids, because in a lot of instances they are kids, you know, fulfill their lifelong dream of making it to the NHL. I mean, the number of NHL debuts I covered, I can't even remember. You know, I remember watching UC Saros's first NHL game. I remember watching Victor Arvidsson's first NHL game. You know, the list goes on and on. But you know, what did you see from Weisblatt? He is back in Milwaukee. But I imagine he might be next man up if injuries continue to pile up. So in the two games he did play on this trip, what did you see from Weisblatt?
Yeah, I thought he showed well. I thought he played his role. And I honestly actually expected him to come up the week prior when Cole Smith got hurt. I thought they would go straight for Weisblatt over Vinny Hinostroza. And they went with Hinostroza, who's more of a scoring option. And I mean, it makes sense. Preds need some goal scoring. So that's why they went with Hinostroza initially. But look, you got a fourth line grinded out winger missing in Cole Smith out long term. Ozzie Weisblatt is the first call I would make in terms of filling that fourth line spot. So he's proved in camp, and he proved in rookie camp and in training camp with the big club, he can fit a fourth line role. And he's a former first round pick who has some skill, but the snarl is what's going to get him a roster spot with the Preds. And it's what got him the roster spot with a good camp, and then right after New Year's, he gets his opportunity. And it's really interesting. You mentioned, Adam, a part of this that I think has gone under-talked about, which is that he was loaned to the Predators for the end of the AHL season and the playoffs last year from the Sharks, who basically gave up on him. They took him as a first-round pick. Then 4 years later, they weren't too interested in developing him or having him around. The Sharks' AHL team was really, really bad, especially last year. And the Predators wanted to trade for Weisblatt at the deadline, and the Sharks didn't accept any offers from the Preds, but they figured, hey, we can get him some AHL playoff experience. If we keep him, this is good for our guy. And then he comes to the Admirals, and then the Preds hit him with the classic kids bringing home the dog, can we keep him? And they found a deal. They traded Igor Afanasyev, and Afanasyev probably wasn't going to make the team out of camp again this year, and he would have had to go through waivers if he didn't make the team out of camp. And Weisblatt is waiver exempt because he's a year younger than Afanasyev. And it worked out perfectly for the Preds, especially because Afanasyev goes back to the KHL, and the Sharks got literally nothing out of the trade. So the Preds basically got a big audition from Weisblatt. They decided they liked his game enough to pursue the trade that they had been going for and found something that worked. And he showed in camp. Obviously, I never saw him in camp with the Sharks or in AHL with the Sharks personally, but I think the switch of organizations was reinvigorating for him. And it helped him really define the type of player he could be in the NHL. And I would expect him to be back at some point the rest of this year.
Another player who made his season debut for the Nashville Predators on this road trip, also against the Vancouver Canucks last Friday, was Spencer Stastny. Spencer Stastny missed all of training camp for personal reasons. Once he was ready to come back, he went to Milwaukee, played several games there, and was recalled and played his first game of the season against the Canucks. Over those three games, he averaged roughly 16 and a half minutes of ice time. He was playing on the third pair. What did you see of Spencer Stastny? And I feel like Spencer Stastny, especially with some of the issues the Predators have had on defense this season with injuries and such, I know we've seen Nick Blankenberg play a bigger role than we anticipated, you know, just to name one player, but Spencer Stastny was a valuable depth player for the Predators last season. I felt like his presence was certainly missed in the lineup, even if he's not a name brand player. So what have you seen from Stastny since he returned to the lineup, and where does that leave the Predators' defense?
Yeah, I think if Stastny had reported to camp and gone through camp, he would have made the Predators out of camp this year. And that would have been his first NHL opening night roster. He made his debut two seasons ago. Then last year at the end of the season, I mean, he was a third-pair defenseman. He was Luke Shen's partner on the third pair, and he was playing over Dante Fabbro in the playoffs before he got hurt on a hit by Dakota Joshua in Game 3 of the series against the Canucks. So this is a player that Andrew Brunette absolutely loves. And we talk about the system and whether or not the system has been working for the team this year in the same way it did last year. Well, Spencer Stastny is a player who is a perfect fit for Andrew Brunette's system. The way he moves, the way he defends, and he's a perfect partner for Luke Shen, too, because as Hal has pointed out a couple of times on the broadcast over the last week, Shen can just hang out in front of the net and punish guys, and he can finish checks behind the net, and he can be what Luke Shen is supposed to be, which is a third-pair defensive defenseman who plays physical every chance he gets, because he's got this D partner who is whizzing around, who's also very defensively responsible, but can lug the puck. And maybe lug isn't the right word because he flies more than he lugs, Stastny does. But yeah, we saw it on both ends in flashes throughout his three games this week. And as long as he's able to, I don't see any reason why he doesn't play the rest of the season in the NHL and really get stretched out. And maybe, just maybe, Adam, I mean, you think they give him top pair minutes towards the end of the season here if they get a chance?
It's a good question. And where the Predators are in the standings, they will have an opportunity to play younger players in more prominent roles. Because where the Predators are in the standings, it's going to be a tough climb, which is putting it lightly, to get back into playoff contention, not making the playoffs, just to get back into the conversation about making the playoffs. It's going to be, you know, statistically incredibly difficult, but that could be something that we see more of. One other young player I want to discuss who we saw earlier in the season, went back to the American League and is now back with the big club, is Fedor Svechkov. Had 2 points in three games on the road trip, and especially with the injury to Steven Stamkos, depending on how long Stamkos could be out if he does miss any games, I imagine we could see Svechkov playing a prominent role in the top six if Stamkos is sidelined.
Yeah, I think if everyone were to have come out of last game healthy, Svechkov's probably going back to Milwaukee this weekend. But if they need a center, he's going to stay up, I would think. So we'll find out when the Preds practice tomorrow who is and isn't available and who is and isn't injured. But yeah, I think Svechkov in this second call-up, it's been obvious how much better he is. And he flat-out said it in the post-game press conference after the game on Saturday when he had his first NHL multi-point game against the Flames. He just feels so much more comfortable and composed in every way. And he didn't have a shift skipped this entire week when he came back. And they had to hide him defensively a little bit in his first call-up. And it's not because he's an offense-only guy. It's just because he's new to the NHL. He's 21 years old. He's undersized. He's still got to fill out. I mean, he's 6 feet tall, but he's slim. He's listed as 187 pounds, and he's gotten pushed around a little bit out there, which is fine for a rookie. But they tried to hide his defensive minutes. They tried to hide his defensive zone faceoffs in his first call-up, and that didn't really happen this week. He took every shift with his guys when able to, and even as his line mates were getting injured, they still went to Svechkov, and they went to him in bigger roles. So he's creative. I think he's learning on the fly in a lot of ways. I think in a perfect world, this maybe is one more AHL season for him, and you see those rookie moments here and there, but I think this experience will put him exactly where he needs to be long-term for the Preds, which is probably a middle six center for the highest potential of his career, to be a defensively responsible two-way guy who drives offense and plays with some scoring wingers too and plays on a power play. So, no, I like what I've seen from Svechkov. I think it's very promising, and I think all these Preds first-round picks that are starting to matriculate are doing so in the way you would hope and making their mark this year.
Coming up next on Preds Insiders, the NHL is rolling out its quarter-century teams for every franchise in the NHL. The Predators list won't be out for a few weeks, but we're not going to wait for that. We're going to put together our own quarter-century teams. We'll do that next. Max Herz with Adam Vingan on Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Adam Vingan joined this week by Max Herz of the Predators Radio Network. Speaking of Predators on the radio, Predators fans, Smashville Live is back tomorrow night at Brewhouse 100 in Bellevue at 6 o'clock. Max Herz will be there. You can meet Max Herz. He's a wonderful young man. But you can also meet Mark Jankowski and Colton Sissons. So,
and Hal Gill.
And Hal Gill. People that you want to meet will be there.
If you are a Providence College hockey fan, you can meet Hal Gill and Mark Jankowski.
Two for one. So Predators fans, Smashville Live tomorrow night. Brewhouse 100 in Bellevue at 6 o'clock. Starring Max Herz, Hal Gill, Colton Sissons, and Mark Jankowski. So, Max, next week, the Predators will induct Shea Weber and Pekka Rinne into the Golden Hall's inaugural class of 2024. David Poile is already in the class. So Shea Weber, newly minted Hockey Hall of Famer, and Pekka Rinne will join David Poile in the hall. That will happen next Thursday night when the Predators host the Chicago Blackhawks. The day before, all three inductees will be honored at a fundraising lunch downtown. Proceeds from the lunch will benefit the Nashville Predators Foundation and the 365 Pediatric Cancer Fund, presented by Twice Daily. Max, you will be at this luncheon. Are you emceeing this luncheon?
No, I believe Pete Weber will be emceeing, as he should be. But it's gonna be awesome, especially benefiting the 365 Fund, co-founded by Rinne and Weber.
Yes.
There's no better way to bring those guys in. So it'll be awesome, and these are people that we've celebrated before, and I don't think there's such a thing as over-celebration in Smashville of these three.
So Shea Weber and Pekka Rinne will join David Poile in the inaugural Golden Hall. They will be celebrated next Thursday when the Predators host the Chicago Blackhawks, an appropriate opponent too, considering all of the battles that Shea Weber and Pekka Rinne had with the Blackhawks over their careers. So the NHL is doing this project. They're doing quarter-century teams because, of course, it's now 2025. So they're rolling them out. They started late December. The Predators' first and second teams do not come out until January 29th. So this is what the NHL explains. Quote, both the first team and second team will consist of three forwards, two defensemen, and one goaltender. Each club's first and second quarter century teams will be selected by a panel of media, retired players, and executives specific to that club. Players under consideration for selection are those who have appeared in the game for the respective franchises since January 1st, 2000. So one thing to keep in mind as it relates to the forwards specifically, it's just three forwards. It doesn't need to be a left winger, a center, and a right winger. It just has to be three forwards. So the Predators list does not come out until January 29th, but I don't want to wait 3 weeks, so we're going to do it now. So Max and I have come up with our first and second quarter century Predators team. So Max, I am going to read my first team, and you tell me how many of these players also happen to be on your first team.
Okay, I'm just glad you're going first. I wanted you to go first.
All right.
So thank you.
Well, you're going to go first for the second team, so I'm going to start with the first team.
Okay.
Some of these are a no-brainer. Philip Forsberg is on my first team. Roman Josi is on my first team. Shea Weber is on my first team, and Pecorine is on my first team. The second and third forward spots were interesting. I landed on Ryan Johansson and Mike Fisher. So I went with Philip Forsberg, Ryan Johansson, Mike Fisher, Roman Josi, Shea Weber, and Pecorine. How many of those were on your list?
Four of the six.
And I'm going to guess we have different forwards.
Yes. Both of the guys I don't have from your first team were on my second team.
Johansson and Fisher?
Yes.
Okay, so who was on your first team?
I had David Legwand and Marty Erat.
Okay, and you know what's funny? I had them on my second team. So here is my reasoning for Ryan Johansson. Now, Ryan Johansson, it was a splashy trade in January of 2016. One for one, Seth Jones for Ryan Johansson. And at that time, Ryan Johansson was in his early 20s. You know, a lot of untapped potential. And, you know, Ryan Johansson played how many seasons? I mean, he was on this team for what? Eight seasons, I want to say, off the top of my head. He was on this team for parts of eight seasons. And this team's greatest run of success coincides with Ryan Johansson playing a prominent role as this team's number one center. How many times did Predators fans have that conversation about never having a true number one center? Ryan Johansson was downright dominant at times. Speaking of the Blackhawks, that first round series against the Blackhawks in 2017 when the Predators swept the Blackhawks, Johansson was one of the best players on the ice. So I have Johansson just because his run as the team's number one center coinciding with their greatest run of success as a franchise. And I had Mike Fisher as a former captain, as one of the most well-known members of the Nashville Predators. There's the obvious connection with Carrie Underwood, his wife. But I think that Fisher was here for a long time, was a fan favorite, played a big role in some important games as well. So that's why I landed on Johansson and Fisher.
I like it. Yeah, I put Erat over Johansson, and I could pretty easily be swayed off of that.
Okay, and you had Legwand over Fisher, because of Legwand being the first pick of the franchise.
Yeah, longevity, all-time leader in games played, which, by the way, within the next month, Roman Josi could pass David Legwand for most games in Preds history. He's just 10 behind him now. But, yeah, I think on the longevity piece, I think Legwand definitely on the first team. I would be more than receptive to Johansson over Erat, for sure. But, I mean, don't you want Forsberg and Erat on the same team?
Yes, I mean, symmetry. We have to love that symmetry. So I have Forsberg, Johansson, Fisher, Josi, Weber, and Rene. Max has Forsberg, Legwand, and Erat, Josi, Weber, and Rene. So who is on your second team, Max Hurst?
So two guys you already named, Ryan Johansson and Mike Fisher.
All right.
Then two recent defensemen, Mattias Ekholm and PK Subban.
Okay.
And I had Juuse Saros as my second goalie.
Interesting.
And then my third forward, I don't know if the... I can't decide if this is going to be a pick that wows you or you also have this guy.
Okay.
I think it could go either way.
Let's hear it.
I went Jordan Tootoo.
Interesting.
Yeah. Is that crazy or no?
Jordan Tootoo was not my selection, but I don't think it's crazy.
Okay.
Just because he is, you know, when Predators fans think about players that embody the Predator way, as we've heard David Boyle and Barry Trotz say over the years, Jordan Tootoo is at or near the top of that list. So go over your second team again. Jordan Tootoo, Ryan Johansson, Mike Fisher, Mattias Ekholm, PK Subban, and Juuse Saros.
Yes.
We have a pretty, you know, our teams are pretty different. So here was my second team. As I mentioned, I have David Legwand and Martin Erath on my second team. I also have Matthias Ekholm on my second team. Then we have completely different players. I have Kimmo Tiimonen as my second defenseman over PK Subban. Now, I know I just made the argument about Brian Johansson being a critical part of this team's success during its greatest run. PK Subban was also part of that with the Predators, was a Norris Trophy finalist. As a member of the Predators, helped that team get to the Stanley Cup in his first season. I have absolutely no problem with PK Subban. I went with Kimmo Tiimonen. You know, I just think he is another player synonymous with the Nashville Predators. And I just think, you know, he was a fan favorite as well. You know, he played 573 games for the Predators, which is 10th most in franchise history, you know, between 1998, 1999, and 2006, 2007. You know, I feel like I needed to include some, like, original Predators on this list, and Kimmo Tiimonen, you know, a good ambassador for this organization in its early stages. So that's why I went with Tiimonen. So I had Legwand, Erath, Ekholm, Tiimonen. I went with Tomas Vokoun over UC Saros. I went with the longevity argument there. I think UC Saros is... Well, actually, it's funny I say this, and maybe I should be swayed. Tomas Vokoun has played 383 games for the Predators. UC Saros, 382. So UC Saros about to take over second place behind Pecorino. So Pecorino. So perhaps I should have included UC Saros. But
for another week, you're good.
Yes. So I went with Tomas Vokoun. Here was my third forward, Steve Sullivan.
Nice.
I went with Steve Sullivan. Nick Kieser approves. I went with Steve Sullivan just because of how much of an impactful, if I recall this correctly, he was a trade deadline acquisition. And he was an impactful trade deadline acquisition. He had 30 points in 24 games after being traded from the Blackhawks to the Predators. And he had two 60-point seasons as a member of the Nashville Predators, 68 points in 2005-2006 and 60 points in 2006-2007. You know, Steve Sullivan, another player, when I think about the Predators, he is one of the first players that comes to mind. So my full second team, and I would love your audit of my second team. Steve Sullivan, David Legwand, Martin Erath, Matthias Ekholm, Kimmo Tiimonen, and Tomas Vokoun.
I think the argument for Sullivan is very similar to the argument for Tuttu. So I think we went in similar directions, and I think that sixth forward overall is where you could really make some interpretation. Like, you could argue for Victor Arvidsson.
You could argue. Yeah, you could argue for Craig Smith. You could argue for Victor Arvidsson. You know,
Cliff Ronning,
as Nick Kieser says. You know, another. You know, the other obvious name I didn't include on my list among defensemen, which I'm sure Predators fans are not upset about, is Ryan Suter. You know, Ryan Suter. He was on the Wilds. Or quarter century team. They're still paying him after all. But yeah, they're like, I'm wondering who the biggest snubs are. You know, I did not include UC Saros, and I could easily be swayed to include him over Tomas Vokoun. You know, I mentioned Ryan Suter. You know, I mentioned Craig Smith. I'm thinking of some other players with longevity.
Maybe Dan Hamhuis is another
Dan
one.
Dan Hamhuis played 600 games for the Predators over two stints with the team. You know, I didn't mention Ryan Ellis. You could have included Ryan Ellis, Scott Hartnell. You know, there are plenty of players who are not on that list. So to recap, and we'll have Max do his as well. My first quarter century team. And remember, the NHL will formally unveil the Predators team on January 29th. My first team: Forsberg, Johansson, Fischer, Yossi, Weber, and Rinne. My second team: Sullivan, Legwand, Erath, Ekholm, Tiimonen, and Vokoun.
My first team: Forsberg, Legwand, Erath, Yossi, Weber, Rinne. Second team: Johansson, Fischer, Tuttu, Ekholm, Subban, Saros. So I think the big snubs are whoever defensemen 5, 6, and 7 are.
Yeah, there are a lot of good defensemen that were left off this exercise. But the Predators' quarter-century teams will be unveiled by the NHL on January 29th. We'll revisit this in a few weeks and see who had the most accurate first and second teams. Coming up next, we'll look at the homestand to come. Max Herz, Adam Vingan. This is Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Predators Insiders, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Adam Vingan, Max Herz. The Predators are back in action on Saturday night It will be a Saturday night in Smashville when Alex Ovechkin and the Washington Capitals come to town as the Predators kick off a 5-game homestand. It's been a long time since the Predators have been at home, but you'll see them a lot over the next couple of weeks. As we mentioned in the first segment, a really interesting homestand. The Capitals, who are arguably the biggest surprise of the NHL season. You know, they made the playoffs last season with a negative 37 goal differential, which was one of the worst in NHL history among teams that qualified for the playoffs. The Vegas Golden Knights, as we record this, are the number one team in the NHL, led by Hart Trophy candidate Jack Eichel. The Chicago Blackhawks are struggling. They are one of the two teams lower than the Predators in the standings. But as Max said, when the Blackhawks and Predators get together, it's always a fun matchup. The Minnesota Wild are in town next Saturday, January 18th, and Tuesday, January 21st. I'm hoping to see UC Soros and the Nashville Predators against Yaroslav Askarov and the San Jose Sharks. But we'll see. But this is a really interesting homestand. You know, the first game pops out just because of the star power on the Washington Capitals. Alex Ovechkin has been on an absolute tear all season long as he tracks down Wayne Gretzky for the all-time goals record. But since he returned from a broken leg right after the Christmas break, he has 4 goals in 6 games. I mean, Alex Ovechkin is scoring at a rate, I think it might be the highest of his career, and he's been scoring goals for a very long time. And by the way, Alex Ovechkin has scored 6 goals in 9 career games against UC Soros. So pretty high rate of success, Alex Ovechkin against UC Soros. So perhaps you'll see Alex Ovechkin get closer to Wayne Gretzky's record. Of course, if you're listening to this, you hope that that happens and the Predators win. But having covered Alex Ovechkin at one point of his career, it's incredible to see what he's doing at near 40 years old.
Yeah, come out and see him. The Caps looked really good when the Preds played them in D.C. in November. I came away really impressed with the Caps in that game, and they've got 2 good goalies, too. Like, this is a team that could win a playoff series or two in the East this year, I think.
The Vegas Golden Knights, if I'm not mistaken, the Predators have not seen the Golden Knights this season. The Golden Knights are the best team in the league. They are 28-9-3 on the season for 59 points. They have won 9 of their past 10 games. As I said, Jack Eichel, which this is might be a surprise to you. It was a surprise to me. Jack Eichel has never, not only has he never won a major individual award, he's never even been a finalist for a major individual award. Now, he did miss significant time because of injury, and he played for the Buffalo Sabres. And not a lot of great things happen when you play for the Buffalo Sabres until you leave, and then you win championships.
And things get really easy.
Just ask Ryan O'Reilly about leaving Buffalo, Sam Reinhart, Brandon Montour, Jack Eichel, et cetera, et cetera. But Eichel's been fabulous this season. If I'm not mistaken, you know, I do know this for a fact. He leads the Golden Knights with 53 points, which is 18 more than the next closest player on his team, Mark Stone. That is the biggest gap between the leading scorer and the second leading scorer on a team in the NHL. So the Golden Knights, and there's the Jonathan Marchessault of it all, him playing his former team for the first time. That's another intriguing matchup on this homestand.
Yeah, I'd like to see Marchessault have a big game in that one, obviously. I mean, you know, he made it very public and clear that he took it personally when the Golden Knights did not want to keep him. So even though it's in Nashville and the Preds won't get to go back to Vegas until the final week of the season, which is not very storybook for Marchessault, but yeah, I'd like to see some mojo from Marchessault in this game. And also the Predators have the Golden Knights first round pick next year, so it helps to beat them and doesn't actually really matter because all that matters is what round of the playoffs they lose in. But my God, these guys seem to find a way to win every freaking game. Down 2 goals, no problem. They come back, win in overtime. So, yeah, they've still got their pixie dust out there in Las Vegas somehow.
Yes, and just a ridiculous group of talent. We mentioned Jack Eichel and Mark Stone. You've got Shea Theodore and Alex Petrangelo on the back end. Tomas Hertl, a member of that team as well. Then, as we mentioned, against the Chicago Blackhawks, Pecorine and Shea Weber will be honored and join David Poile in the Golden Hall. And then, of course, it's a game against the Blackhawks. So Predators fans need no reason to hate the Chicago Blackhawks. And we'll talk more about the game against the Sharks on next week's program, considering Yaroslav Askarov, and we'll revisit that whole thing. But the Predators are back in action on Saturday night in Smashville against the Washington Capitals. Alex Ovechkin and the Washington Capitals. Max, glad to have you back in town, my friend. We'll hear you all over the Predators radio network.
Yeah, great to be here. Thanks for having me, Adam, and looking forward to seeing everybody at Smashville Live tomorrow night at 6 in Bellevue, and then at all 5 home games. My God, has it been a long time? It will have been 19 days in between home games, which is ridiculous.
The Predators are back at home on Saturday against the Washington Capitals. Of course, we have all Predators coverage for you here on 102.5. 106.3 The Game. For Max Herz and Nick Kieser, I'm Adam Bingen. This is Predators Insiders 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
My fellow Americans, this July, we're celebrating America's birthday at Moda Casino by giving away $1,776,000 in prizes. And one lucky winner is going to take home $1 million SC. Happy 250th birthday, America. You're welcome. Download Moto Casino today.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Hi, everybody. It's James and Andy here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two-fourths of a group of people who love facts, and we love to find new facts, and we come here every week and tell each other about them. For instance, Andy, did you know that one of the world's oldest cycling road races is getting much harder because people keep stealing the road?
I want to know more already, but I'm instead going to tell you my new fact, which is that some ancient coffins from the 17th century have faces.
The coffins have faces.
It's really creepy.
Not just on the inside.
No.
Wow. If you like the sound of those facts, or indeed facts in general, then come and find us, No Such Thing as a Fish, wherever you get your podcasts.